You should travel. One person's mission to get to 100 countries, and being that I'm getting quite close, I reserve the right to change that number in future. You should travel. Hello, and welcome to a very surreal moment in my life as I sit here on the banks, the retreating banks, I hear, of the Dead Sea. But let's zoom out and tell you first of all where I am and what the fuck is going on. Hello and welcome to the banks of the Dead Sea in Jordan. I'm sat in a pair of shorts on what appears to be snow, but it's not. It's salt. It's so salinated, it's so salty, this sea, which by the way is not a sea, it's called the Dead Sea, but it's actually a giant lake really, is so salty that you can see the salt on the banks as sort of white mineral deposits, crystallised salt, and it's kind of crunchy. Here's a sound of me prodding it. Jordan, that's where I am. Let's start with that. How did I get here? And then we'll work out what's going on. And I'll tell you a bit more. So, welcome along. Lovely to be here. I flew on a budget airline called Wizz, without an H. Don't know why they dropped the H. Probably couldn't afford the domain name. Wizz took me here. And I believe I might have this wrong. Is it a Hungarian airline? One of those. Anyway, it's cheap. You know when you can't recline the seats and the staff are just a little bit more shouty than you would appreciate. One of those airlines. But, you know, cheap. Got here for £100. Amazing. Not bad for a 5-hour flight from London. And here I am, £100 or $110 later. And I'm sat on the banks of the Dead Sea. Got off at the airport yesterday. Got myself a rental car. Drove past the capital, Amman, and came here. This is a land of 12 million people, although you certainly wouldn't think it looking at this barren view. Stayed in a beyond my class hotel, 5-star, with a buffet. This morning I had breakfast, they had a donut wall. It looked like a climbing wall for donuts. What's that about? It's easier to list what they didn't have than what they did have. Every conceivable type of egg, every conceivable type of everything really, apart from bacon. But you know what, they had beef bacon, and that was kind of nice, if you like leather. So, to rewind, arrived last night in an airport outside Amman, rented a car, drove here. Quick note on that, this is a public health message for Jordanian people. On most cars, nearly all, you'll find that on the corners of the cars, there's some little orange things. These are called indicators, sometimes known in North America as signals. What these things do, Jordanians, is they actually let other drivers know what you are going to do. Yeah, actually before you do it. So, for example, imagine you're a bus and you're pulling in the middle of the night to get some passengers, and that involves crossing a few lanes of traffic and then stopping. Perhaps it would be a good idea to let someone behind you know that you're about to do that. How about that? That's where the indicators come in. Yep, they are available throughout the Middle East. But they're very much like your cognitive health. If you don't use them, you will lose them. You can communicate with other traffic without yelling out of the window in Arabic. It's absolutely fantastic. Give it a go. After a meal and some Jordanian wine, which is quite impressive, being that most of this land is not in any way fertile. It's quite a small percentage of it that you can actually farm on, but they've managed to knock up some vineyards. And despite it being a predominantly Muslim country, and by predominantly I mean predominantly, they don't mind a bit of booze here and there. Well, some of them. So I had myself a nice bottle of Jordanian red, got me some Power Zeds, and then woke up bright and early for a rather large breakfast. Came down the roughly 300 stairs to this, the muddy banks of the Dead Sea in Jordan. And I can see the other side of this sea, and it's just a huge mountain range. And it looks very rugged, very arid, very barren. And of course it is. I mean, You know the lovely big fat Mediterranean Sea? That heart of the outdoor life in the southern parts of Europe. Well, it used to stretch a bit further across what is now a mountain range into this. So in other words, this sea would have been connected to the Mediterranean. When the Mediterranean retreated, it left this absolutely monumental puddle behind. But it's so salinated, it's so salty that it doesn't really support any life. I mean, there might be flamingos. I know that sounds weird, but I did have a very similar landscape in Bolivia once, and there was a whole flock of flamingos just chilling out, eating krill, which is why they're pink. That one freaked me right out. So there might be some flamingos around here. You would think I'd probably notice if there was a flamingo. I think I've seen more plastic flamingos in my life than real flamingos. I wonder what everyone else's ratio of plastic to real flamingo is. I would guess most urban people have not seen a real flamingo. I feel very lucky. Anyway, I don't know if there's any around here. I don't know if there's any thing at all around here. There's just mud, salt and water. And it's big enough to have some little waves, as you can hear. But what's really interesting, and you may have heard this from other people that have been to this part of the world, is the Dead Sea, so-called because, let's be honest, it does not support much life, is so salty that it has a completely different buoyancy to, well, normal, non-salty water. You might notice when you swim in a salt pool or in a very salty sea that it's slightly easier to swim in the sense that there's more buoyancy. This takes the piss. This is so salty that you float no matter where you are. And it's actually quite a weird experience. I've just done it. So you wade in, you get some very muddy feet, you go past some random German and Spanish tourists that are floating, taking photographs, and then you release and you let go, and your feet shoot up above the water. It's quite panicky at first because everything you've ever done in water does not relate to what's happening. So your feet are above the water and you can't really get them back down again unless you really sort of wrestle. And when you wrestle, you push through and then, of course, you can stand up again. Then you try the same thing but on your belly, and your entire belly is, well, most of it at least, is above the water. It's such a bizarre experience, but it's such a cool experience. You could, in theory, sit on your ass, paddle out a little bit, use your hands and flap across this entire sea to what looks to be, on the other side of it, in the far, far distance, yeah, a dwelling of some description. It looks like a town there. I can see some little white houses poking through the morning mist. It's so beautiful. So here we go. I'm on the banks of the Dead Sea. I'm wearing an obnoxious pair of orange swimming shorts, and I'm already covered in salt from where I went in before, but let's do it again, and this time I'll talk my way through it. So imagine a okay, imagine a beautiful man, go for Chippendale, and then that's the sound of a kid in the background who's loving life. A lot of people are rubbing minerals all over their body. I'm just going to sit on my arse now. I just need to go a bit further.
Okay. And that is floating. That is floating. So I can't get a flex now. I'll do a little flipper.
All right, so I'm coming back to you because I can't take the device in, because if I drop it, then it'll be fucked, and it's because it's incredibly salty, as I think I may have mentioned. But that experience was lovely. That was me floating on my bum. One of the things I didn't expect is a salty ring piece. That's news to me. Just around the, how do we put this, gentleman's calamari, I have a sort of salty zinging experience, which isn't unpleasant, but it is, it's a bit of a morning livener. Very good. A lot of people come here and surround themselves with the mud before then jumping in. There's a man behind me with sort of the hallmarks of American football player, where he's smeared mud over his face in lines. Looks like some sort of tribal warrior. I might go and beat him up just because I feel so bloody alive. But yeah, a lot of people come here and do that because there's lots of minerals within the mud. In fact, they say this is very, very good for your health. And I feel like it is. I feel like if you had some sort of open wound, fuck me, would you know about it? Because just the repressive nature of the amount of salt on me is even making my skin zing, particularly around where I've got a very minor sunburn. If you want agony, get yourself sunburnt on the shores for 4 to 5 hours, jump in here, and I reckon you might die. Reporting from the rather beautiful and oasis-like shores of the Dead Sea, surrounded by mountains and palm trees in the distance and a few luxury hotels and a few dad bods. I can only say I advise it. Feels good. If I lived here, I'd definitely be doing this every day. A snapshot into what an all-inclusive would be like, isn't it? In the sense that there's a buffet in the morning and there's a buffet in the evening, and all day you can just lounge around various different swimming pools doing whatever you want and jump in the sea if you need to. I mean, that's what most people do, isn't it, on these kind of holidays? And it's quite interesting to me because I never do these kinds of holidays, and I'll be leaving today anyway in a car to go and discover some more cool stuff. For example, Petra. I'm gonna go there tomorrow. But it's nice to see how everyone else does it. It doesn't do it for me. I quite like this after some madness, you know what I mean? Just going into my room. Yeah, I quite like the idea of doing this after some madness. You know, if I'd rented a motorbike and gone through a bit of a desert or done some mad trek on a camel, I could definitely handle this for a couple of days, but I don't really feel like I've earned it. Anyway, it's not a complaint, just an observation. Having a bloody lovely time. Tomorrow, Petra, the jewel in the crown of Jordan. I don't know much about it. Like all these things, I never researched them before I come. I like to sort of get involved in the research when I arrive. I've seen many an image, and I've met people that have been there that say it's spectacular. I also know it's one of the 7 wonders of the world. So it's pretty damn sure going to be mighty fine. So far, I mean, my brief experience in Jordan, great. Bit rough and ready, particularly on the roads. Lots of sort of lunar landscapes. Oh, speaking of which, might go to Wadi Rum. Wadi Rum is where The Martian was shot and is as close as you can get to Mars on Earth. So I don't know if you're listening, Elon, but you could save yourself a lot of bother and just come here and divert your money into the good of the world instead of being a giant, and I'll put this nicely, cunt. Join me as I cross Jordan. My name's Vinny. I should have done the intro. I never actually did it. Is it too late? Oh, I guess you probably know by now anyway. I'm on a mission to get to 100 countries. This is country 97. I've never been here before. Wow, getting close to the big one, 97. Next up, I'm going to be going on to Sri Lanka. I'm on my way there now, just stopped here for four nights. And that will be country 98. So good, definite couple of podcasts coming your way. This one and at least one from Sri Lanka, might be two, who knows. See what happens as we continue the adventure. This is Vinny. It's the Scrap Metal Man. Good morning and welcome to Petra. The sun is rising on a blue sky, and I'm on a dusty trail walking along. I paid my entry fee, and here I am in Petra. Oh, how much was the entry fee? So when you get your visa here, don't worry, it's really stress-free. You apply online, you get a visa, and part of the visa, you tick the box that says, I want to go to Petra and stuff. And it will make it all one price, which was about £70. And that means you can get into Petra for free once you've got that, yeah. Anyway, that's the boring stuff. Let's get to it. I'm on this dusty track, and I'm a couple of Arabic-speaking folk around me. And, oh, my God, there's 100 tourists coming from behind me, so I better start walking. There's also a golf cart for the Americans. I don't know if they're American, but they don't want to walk. I'm just being very judgy. Jordan, where am I and what the hell's going on? Petra. Let's start where it all started. The Rift Valley in Africa. Right, we know we come from there because we found loads of bones, and the oldest bones in the world are from there, from Neanderthals and so on. Neanderthals died off, we turned into humans, Homo sapiens, and we grew up in various places, but it all started in the Rift Valley. The first civilization, i.e. people that weren't nomadic and decided, hang on, maybe we should hang out here for a while, was in Mesopotamia, which isn't a million miles away from here. And there was obviously a lot of civilizations in this part of the world, yeah, before we conquered the rest of planet Earth by every means known, apart from flight, of course. So, yeah, that's where I am. I'm in Petra. Now, Petra was a city. When you hear people go on about Petra in Jordan, what they're really going on about is a whole bunch of stuff that harks back to when this place was a buzzing civilization. Why isn't it now? Well, basically because there was a huge earthquake. We'll get to that. I'm being slightly stalked by a freewheeling golf cart. I'm just going to let it pass, but I do run the risk then of having 100 tourists behind me. Yeah. Being stalked by a golf cart, the most pathetic horror movie of all time. Right, just eavesdropped in and saved a few quid by occasionally dancing into other people's tours. That gentleman was saying that in front of us is a large tomb carved into the rock. The rock of the era looks a bit like what you might expect in Utah or Arizona, sort of orangey brown, large, sometimes table-like rocks. Absolutely massive. I'm talking, your average rock is probably, I don't know, 7 to 10 times the height of me. And I'm at the beginning entrance, really, into Petra, the town that was Petra. It's not known exactly when it was built, Petra, but the city certainly began to prosper as the capital of the empire. The empire, by the way, forgive my pronunciation, was the Nabataean Empire, right? And these guys were knocking around about 100 years before old baby Jesus. So this would have been a bustling city. So let's go 2,200 years ago. We do know that by that point, Petra was buzzing away and it was kicking off. People were selling, you know, frankincense, myrrh, spices. It was a real sort of bustling metropolis, and as a result of lots and lots of people living here, some of them were really rich. And the rich people that died, well, like rich people that die all over the world, including today, they wanted to be known after their death. So some of the rocks around me are carved, hand-carved, of course, into these degraded tombs. For example, the one next to me is probably about, let's have a look, 30 metres high, and is a huge rock face. And into that, they've carved these panels. And at the top of that, there's some obelisks, yeah? Obelisks carved into the rock face, almost like columns, right? Above what appears to be a doorway. That doorway would have been the door to the tomb. And the obelisks represent, apparently, having just listened in on someone else's tour, the dead people that live there. A fella, his wife, and his two kids, all buried in a hand-carved tomb, and clearly they did not want to be forgotten. And they still aren't. I don't know if they're still in there. I presume they're long gone. And around me, I can also see some other tombs. Oh, I didn't know you could just walk up there. Oh, let's do that. I thought that was out of bounds. You can just walk straight off the main path and go and have a look at some of the carvings on the rocks. So like a lot of places in the world, including Greece, they were having their own thing. Everything was going well. Then the Romans came along and said, can I have this? That's what happened here as well. Petra was annexed to the Roman Empire, but it continued to thrive. I mean, it didn't stop it being a kicking place. And there it was, rumbling away, doing its thing. Lots of trade, now with, of course, everyone in the whole Roman Empire. And it was thriving away until
an earthquake in 363, which destroyed much of the city and, just completely ruined everything, actually, because the earthquake, combined with the changes in some trade routes as well, but mostly just a mighty bastard of an earthquake, eventually led to the downfall of the city, and it was ultimately abandoned. Right, now, think about this. That's cool, yeah? But by the middle of the 7th century, Petra appears to be completely deserted, apart from some local lads on camels and horses, the Bedouin, right? And they would come rumbling through this area, looking after livestock, trying to do some basic farming, and then they'd rumble on in their nomadic Bedouin life, right? 1812, Swiss guy, Johannes Bruckhardt, might have got his name slightly wrong, but let's just call him Swiss Yo. Swiss Yo comes rumbling along and hears from these local Arab guys, Bedouin guys, that there's a lost city. He says, oh, come on then, I'll have some of that. Dressed up as an Arab, got on a horse, paid off the local Bedouin and said, come and show me it. 1812 is the year, and along comes this guy and finds a whole city carved out of rock. Rose Red City, they call it, because the rock is often rose red. And he was kind of freaked out, as am I today, as is everyone that comes here, to learn that the Nabataeans, the original people that carved this rock, decided it would be a good idea to not only make cities with temples, a theatre and various other things that I haven't actually seen yet, but we'll get to that soon, but also tombs, big rocks carved into the shape of tombs, and with flourishes and battered scripture that over the years has worn away from the wind. He found it and he said, fuck, this place is amazing. There is evidence to suggest that it actually dates back about 10,000 years. So, in conclusion, how old is it? Certainly a few hundred years BC. That's when at least these carvings were done. But there's evidence that people have been living around this area for 10,000 years. So if we go back 10,000 years, there may not have been these amazing, mighty carvings and the city structure that I'm about to witness, but there were still people knocking around. And in fairly recent history, by comparison, they've built these pretty mighty tombs and what I'm about to witness, the rest of the city. A opening between two absolutely massive rocks, and that gully between those rocks leads down to the lost city of Petra. And this is as close as I've ever felt to Indiana Jones. There's two chaps dressed as barbarians with swords, I think. Swords and metal helmets on, guarding the sort of where the gate would be. Years ago, there was a big arch above this. So imagine, I don't know, 100 metres high between two absolutely monumentally fucking massive rocks. You'd have an arch that went above your head. That arch collapsed in 1895. But it's still pretty bloody amazing just walking down here. I'm now walking past two guys dressed with swords and spears. Let's say hello to them. This is just another normal day. Hello, boys.
Welcome. Come on, photograph
me. Is that okay? I'm going to give this guy a Jordanian, what's it called? A jod, which is about a pound. One jod is about £1. So it could not be easier to travel here. Every time they pose with tourists, they make a whoa noise, which is slightly disconcerting.
Amigo, thank you.
It's nice to be sandwiched between two centurions. Not my average Saturday morning. What is my average Saturday morning? Recently I've been living in Toronto. Saturday mornings quite often involve walking to McDonald's, buying a breakfast sandwich, coming back with a coffee, having a little run. That's been quite a normal thing to do. Oh my goodness, this is quite impressive. I'm now walking down through between two, I would now say probably 150 metres of rock on either side of me. I can only imagine how absolutely stunned that Swiss guy would have been back in the 1800s when he came down here with a couple of local Bedouin fellas, because it feels pretty amazing now. Loads of movies been shot here, of course, including Indiana Jones, essentially in the bottom of a giant chasm. You might wonder why, by the way, if you're a bit of an engineering type, how they didn't flood Petra, being that the entrance to it is just this winding road down between these two rocks, just an ultimate channel for water. They actually built a whole tunnel to divert the water around it. Early civilizations were pretty clever. We still can be when we put our heads together. It's quite dark down here and it's cool, and I'm starved of any sunshine. But as I look up, just a very narrow shaft making its way down to the floor of this chasm. It's pretty bloody impressive. Now about 3 or 4K since the beginning. I should mention, by the way, there's been nowhere else to go. There's just one path down, and there's no offshoots, which makes me now realise when there was an earthquake, no wonder it sealed this place off. It's pretty narrow, they've not got a lot to play with. This is called the SIQ, the S-I-Q, which is basically the road to it, and it would have been paved with limestone, and probably would have had hustle and bustle and market sellers and who knows what, as people were carving into the rock above you as well, on rudimentary ladders, I would guess, without the health and safety of the modern world. But I was just thinking, if there was an earthquake now, this would all be shut off and it would be fucking impossible to get through. No wonder they just gave up. Since, of course, it's all been cleared back again and you can wander down the SIQ towards whatever I'm about to see. Oh, I've just seen what's next. It's called the Treasury. It says the SIQ opens up onto Petra's most magnificent facade, the Treasury, or Alcanza. It's almost 40 metres high. Hang on, wait a second. Just a couple of Arabic fellows having a chat in a speeding golf cart. I will give them credit though, at least they've gone zero petrol down here. 40 metres high, that's what I'm about to say, the Treasury. If you look up Petra now on Google Images or whatever, I would imagine it's the first thing you'll see. Intricately decorated, friezes, figures and more. The Treasury is crowned by a funerary urn, yeah? Which, according to local legend, conceals a pharaoh's treasure. The Treasury was probably constructed about 100 years BC. Whoa. So let's go have a look. That's a carving into the rock, the jewel in the crown, the Treasury, the money shot of Petra from 2,200 years ago ish. Holy fuck. Okay. The SIQ, the chasm between two giant rock faces, is opening up and there's lots of light spilling in. And I can see ahead of me what appears to be a brand new, it's absolutely immaculate, carving into the rock face. Hang on, I've got a couple of golf carts going on. Just as a quick side rant, there's too many able-bodied people in these fucking carts. If you're going to come here, have a walk. Whoa! It looks so unbelievably new. Jesus. It's absolutely immaculate. It must have been recarved. Whoa. Okay, I think I'm gonna have to stop the recording and take this in. Wow. I'm quite speechless actually. Right, I've had a cup of coffee, a very good cup of coffee, 3 Jordanian doodahs, and now I am just sat opposite this utterly magnificent building, the Treasury Alcanza. I am 20 metres away from it, and to see up the top, I have to crick my neck. I feel like this Treasury building's got the wrong name, really. It should be called the Calendar Building. These guys had it going on. The inscriptions represent the Nabatean calendar and numerical systems. The solar orientation is all part of it. It's constructed at 62-degree northeast angle, matching the summer solstice sunrise. So it could say, despite being a couple of thousand years after Stonehenge in England, this is kind of the same deal. It matches the summer solstice sunrise. It's essentially a giant calendar. And these guys had really mastered it, because this whole facade showcases 7 cups, although I can't work out where they are, but I think they've kind of eroded. But 7 cups symbolising the days of the week, 12 columns representing the months of the year, and 24 rings denoting the hours of the day. Amazing. So they'd absolutely mastered this even before old Jesus popped up and started a religion. Actually, it wasn't really him that started a religion, was it? That kind of happened when they came out the old Bible 2.0. First one was a little bit, kill your kids if you need to. Second one calmed it down a little bit more reasonable. Although not entirely reasonable. I suppose my big takeaway, though, is really, it's always amazing to me, no matter where you go in the world, you find people that have mastered and understood time and space way before what have become quite established religions were even here. Loads of pagan rituals all over the world have completely and utterly mastered time and space, and then we built what are fundamentally quite new religions, popular nonetheless, on the back of this stuff. 40,000 years we've had language and art, and for at least 40,000 years there's been religion. Some of them quite well documented, some of them folklore, oral traditions, so it's hard to know. But it's fair to say we've always wanted a bigger, deeper meaning. I'm looking at more and more carvings into stone. Fucking hell. Okay, that one is massive. Wow, this really is quite special, actually. I see why people come to Jordan. Peaceful country, no problems so far. Pretty damn good food. Not too expensive. Easy enough to travel. Easy enough to rent a car. And then you get to this. A whole world within rocks. There's a camel just knocking around. Did not expect that. He's parked in the camel park, which is over by a rock face. He's actually literally tied to a rock face. That is mental. There's like a hole in the rock that's created a place that you can tie onto, and there's a camel tied to a rock. Weirdly, he's got loads of little birds around him. I'm going to go up and say hello. There go the birds. Here's the camel. All right, mate, how you doing? I don't really know what to talk to you about, but he's chewing. Sort of chewing. Oh, I think the birds are eating his poo. That's a new one to me. They live in the rock faces. They're like little mini swallows, they're beautiful. And yep, one's chowing down on camel poo. Camel's not saying much. I've had this problem before on the podcast where I stopped in Cape Verde to interview a cow. It just doesn't make for very good audio. I don't know much about camels. I rode one once in India. It was a horrific experience. Hated it. Ooh, there'd be a camel in here. Jesus. I've just gone into a rock face. Oh, it smells of quite strong of pee and poo. Oh, I guess that must be where he lives. God, think about that. You could come back as a camel that lives in Petra inside a rock face. And during the day, you just sort of chew and look at tourists while them birds feed on your poo. I don't know if that's what you'd want to come back as, but it's, the options are on the table if you're into reincarnation. Well, it's certainly opened up now, and there's absolutely loads of doorways all carved into rock face all the way around me. Some of these would have been temples, some of these would have been dwellings, Some of these would have been meeting places, yeah? And soon, I know from my little brochure pamphlet thing, that I'm also going to see an amphitheatre built by the Romans. Of course, the Romans came and took this place over, as they did so often. Oh, it really has opened out, and now there's these rock faces with quite detailed carvings into them. The best way I can describe it is if you've got the outside of a cathedral, like you might get anywhere in Europe, and pushed the entire cathedral into a rock face. I can see a Jordanian flag, which looks weirdly like the Palestinian flag. They're good buddies with the Palestinians. It's just over the hills there, you'll find Palestine.
You want to ride the mule?
No, I'm not really into mules, thanks. Don't really want to get on a donkey, because I don't really like donkeys.
You see the last mountain there?
Yeah.
Between the mountain, two mountain, small columns.
Oh, I see.
This is the top of the monastery.
Ah. And that's 2 hours walk?
Yes. But you have other option with the mules. Yeah. Take half an hour, just one way.
So a mule is 4 times the speed of a man.
What? Yes.
That's a very fast mule you have there.
Yes.
Huh.
1,000 steps up.
Is it? Yeah. Blimey.
This way.
Okay.
And then go to the right side.
Thanks, guys.
Every side will hold you by air-conditioned Ferrari. Just one way and walk back.
Okay.
Where are you from?
I'm from London. Where are you from? Are you from a local boy? Are you from Petra?
I'm from my mother.
You're from your mother?
Yes.
We're all from our mothers.
All the tourists here are from my mother. No, we are from Bedouin here. We like to joke, you know, with the tourists.
Yeah. You're a Bedouin man?
Yes.
Have you got your own house or you're always moving?
No. Yeah, up here, in the cave.
Do you live in a cave?
Yes. Like, until now, 25 families still in the cave.
There's 25 families still in caves?
You see the last mountain?
Yeah.
It's behind it.
Ah.
You know, some people with a goose, camels here, everything.
Really?
Yes.
Let me ask you something.
Yes.
When you walk into your cave, your house, how do you protect from getting cold? Is there some sort of canvas or some carpet or something on the front? How does it work?
No. We put, like, doors. You know, in the night it's very cold.
Yeah.
We make fires.
Yeah.
And we sit in fire and eat also the tea.
You drink tea?
Yes.
Peppermint tea?
Yes.
Huh.
Tea with, you know, we make it in a fires.
Okay.
And also the eating, we make it in fires.
And do you sing songs in the cave?
Yes.
Can you sing?
Yes.
Huh. Are you a good singer?
Yes.
No, not him.
He's not very good?
There's the one he can sing.
Do you play drums?
No.
No drums. Just singing in the caves?
We sit and we sleep in the cave.
Yeah.
And you have some people you live there from Bedouin. There to the Bedouin village. The King Hussein, you moved some Bedouins in 85 to Bedouin village.
Oh.
Yes.
So now they don't move around?
Not all that.
This is the cave from inside.
Let's have a look. I'm seeing a video of a cave. Oh, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
Got lovely carpets.
Yeah.
But no windows, huh? Just a door to come in.
There's a window.
Oh.
From there,
you will see the desert of Wadi Araba. You will see the border of Palestine.
Oh, yeah. You can see the border of Palestine from there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
You know, you walk from the monastery, like 15 minutes, you catch the view.
Yeah.
You catch all Wadi Araba, Palestine, many places you catch from there.
Okay. Yes. So tell me, is everyone that's in the Bedouin caves, are they all religious people?
Yes.
Yeah.
I see.
By the way, the Bedouin is living behind this mountain, 15 minutes from here.
I see.
Yeah, it's 25 families still living here.
That's great.
Yeah. Tomorrow,
family here.
You will enjoy with the Bedouin there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe you want to sleep with a Bedouin there.
No problem.
I'd sleep in a cave.
Yes.
What's wrong with sleeping in a cave? I mean, you think about it, for most of human history, we slept in caves.
Yes. there's many tourists to sleep in the cave. From the tourist here, you come, you sleep with the Bedouin.
Yeah?
Yes. You make dinners in the fires.
What kind of dinner? Lamb?
Yes, anything you want from Mansaf. We do Mansaf in the fires.
You sound like you have a good life.
Yes.
Huh.
Enjoy your life. The life one time, not two times.
Yeah, right? I agree with you, buddy. You only live once. It's good chatting to you. All right, brother. Thanks, man. I walked inside one of the many tombs built into the side of the mountain. And here, well, large rocky hill, shall we say. And here we can experiment with the echo. As I look out, I look across a ravine and some other etchings in the rock. And I can see the Jordanian flag flapping in the wind. And it's beautiful. So beautiful. Just remembered I can't sing. Oh yeah. Poor bastard outside selling tea and coffee, having to listen to tourists do this all day. The only slight problem, and it's not too bad, but the slight problem is the gentleman asking me if I want a donkey. I would argue a little bit pushy. His name's Mohammed. I mean, everyone's been offering me a donkey, but this guy is something else. He's going to do it again now.
Welcome in Betra. If you want to do it, I can help you back all the way up to the monastery later. If you want, maybe come to mine, I can help you. If you want to take it back, 20 minutes, it's more time. If you want to ride up, it'll be easy. Everybody take it down from here. Later.
All the best.
Back, yes? This is the monastery. The same with the people.
See, this guy is still going on at me. I wouldn't say he's driving me nuts, but he's starting to piss me off. I don't know, it's hard, isn't it? You're a Bedouin guy, you live in a cave. You come to make your living every day, asking tourists if they want to hop on a donkey. And 99% of them say no.
Wake up, my friend. You want
to ride the mule up to the monastery? Don't worry, be happy.
Thousand steps from the last buildings I saw here in Petra up the hill to the monastery. I'm walking past a couple of donkeys that are having some well-earned nose bags of food, a couple of touristy tic-tac knick-knack shops selling fridge magnets and stuff.
Yeah, you want to buy some fridge magnets?
Alright, she's the fridge magnet queen. Quite a lot of hassle, but not like aggressive hassle, but everyone's like, hey, why don't you support my family business? I'll tell you why, because the bloke 200 metres down that way said the same thing, and if I supported every family business, I wouldn't be able to afford to fly home. But it's a beautiful chasm between rocks yet again, with 1,000 stairs up to one of the jewels in the crown, the monastery. The great entertainment on the way is watching people on donkeys. So I've been offered many donkey rides today. I was never tempted. And having looked at people on the back of donkeys, it looks horrific. I mean, first of all, the man that owns the donkey walks while you get on the donkey. They whip the donkey to a point of, I would say, animal cruelty. So now imagine you're on the back of a donkey, you feel a bit of a twat, your donkey's being beaten up, and there's a Jordanian fella behind you with a whip giving the donkey a good kicking. And then you've got to bear in mind that donkeys aren't actually that sure-footed. Well, they certainly don't feel it. All these rocks are sand-covered, and I keep seeing donkey wheel spin. And if you want some comedy to break up the archaeology, I would highly recommend a little bit of fat American on the back of a donkey wheel spinning. The look of fear on their faces,
You know when you cut yourself in the kitchen and it's quite deep and you think, oh my God, and that millisecond of realisation that you've just put a knife through your hand. It's a bit like that, a snapshot of that, but just drawn out over 1,000 stairs on a donkey. Absolutely fucking brilliant. Because I'm glad they're not enjoying it, because I'll tell you who else isn't enjoying it. The fucking donkey that's getting beaten up. So get off your fucking donkey, use your legs, get some exercise. I'd like to say have a beer at the end of it, but I haven't seen any fucking beer all day. Middle East is a bit of a problem for that, but never mind. I was clever enough to bring a bottle of whiskey duty free, so I'll be having a bloody good go on that later. Every now and then you also get a lone donkey just finding his own way down. Here's one now. He's kind of blocking the entire stairway. Foraging for fuck all. You're not going to find anything here, mate. See? He's slipping. How you doing? I'd like to apologise on behalf of humanity that your owner thinks it's okay to whip you. Okay, it's getting a bit intense now. We're having a face-off. Is there any way I could pass? Because you are sort of taking up the whole stairs. I'll just go around the side of you. Yeah, you stay there. Okay, there we are, look. Good. Yeah, not going to lie, I was intimidated by a donkey. I never said I was butch. There's a Spanish fella there. I'd say he's about 70. He's got a walking stick. He's doing it. After 1,000 wonky stone steps, I found the monastery. Yet another mind-blowing rock face with intricate carvings of pillars, figures and windows. But I think you get the idea now, so let's go to the pub. Yes, indeed. After that, it was time for a beer in a bar that used to be a large tomb. A very, very old large tomb. If Lara Croft was a publican, she'd be pulling pints in here.
The place is more 2,000 years ago. Is it an Abbatian tomb? Is it original cave, really cave?
Oh my goodness. I'm having a beer.
You
in...
see that a small rooms?
Yeah.
That is a tomb.
Wow.
Yes.
So I'm having a pint in a pub that is 2,100 years old. That's an old pub.
Yes.
Well, it's an old
and
tomb.
The bar is in 1978,
79. Ah.
That is a really the old bar in all the world.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Finishing the day knackered. I've walked 13 kilometres and I'm now in a bar that used to be a tomb. He's just told me it's 2,100 years old. It might be the oldest bar in the world. And it's got free nuts. It used to be a tomb. You can sit where dead bodies used to be. Have a pint. And so I did. Lovely experience. After a few beers, though, I did feel like I might be somewhere in the plot of Scooby-Doo. Time to move on. After Petra, I went on to a place called Wadi Rum. To drive south for about, I can't remember, about 2 hours, I think. I was stopping quite a lot for random cups of coffee and looking at Bedouin tents in the middle of the desert. But, yeah, a whole bunch of fuck all, which actually I have to say is the general theme for Jordan. Great place. Never seen so much fuck all in my life. You know, like, if you're driving through, I don't know, let's just say England, in the fuck all bit, there's always something, even though there's fuck all. Fuck all in England is fields and the occasional barn and the occasional wood, the occasional pub and the occasional village. It's quite hard to get fuck all until you get to, you know, the Scottish Highlands. Whereas here in Jordan, there's just a whole bunch of fuck all. And when I say fuck all, I really mean fuck all. I mean very, very small rocks and an endless view of brown, rocky nothingness. It's amazing in its nothingness, you know? So you'll drive down to Wadi Rum and you'll see a whole bunch of fuck all. And then when you get to Wadi Rum, you could argue that Wadi Rum is kind of fuck all. I mean, it's just massive rocks and great expanses, great for stargazing. And I didn't do this because I didn't have time, but if I came again, or when I come again, I'd go back down to Wadi Rum and I would spend a night in one of those little... You ever seen those sort of glamping cocoons? You know the ones? Sort of like... almost looks like a pod. Yeah. Lots of hexagons stuck together in a sort of space-age way to make a dwelling for the night. You can stay in one of them and gaze up at the stars and sit around the fire and hang out with some Bedouin people and all that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, I didn't get time to do that, but I did get time to go on a train, yes, yesterday. Drove down to Wadi Rum, had a chicken dinner in a very simple restaurant, and then went to train station. And the Jordan Pass, the thing you get when you get your visa, okay, sounds complicated, it's not. The thing you get when you just apply to come to Jordan, they give you this Jordan Pass, and that allows for you to do lots of things, including entry to Petra and this Wadi Rum train thing. So I went down there, went to a train station in the middle of nowhere, quite a few tourists coming around. In the far distance, you'll get these sort of sandstone giant rocks, a bit like Utah or Arizona. You'll look at these sort of bizarre rock formations, sort of a mild mist of red over the desert. Unsurprisingly, where The Martian was shot. Quite a lot of other movies are shot down in the Wadi Rum area. It's the closest you can get to Mars without being buddies with Elon Musk. So you go down there, you get on a train, this old beaten up weathered train. The tracks go through fuck all, a whole bunch of desert, past a few occasional Bedouin camps. And as the train gets going, a lot of excitement, a man came wandering down with the scarf around his head, the sort of look of about half of Jordanian men wear a scarf around their head, particularly sort of desert dwelling folk. And he comes down the train and he's like, "All right, just to let you know, there'll be some gunshots." I don't know why I thought he was joking, but I just thought he was joking. But it doesn't make sense as a joke either. Imagine this rickety old train. Imagine you get a bit bored and you wander down it as it's sort of going, I don't know, 20 miles an hour through rolling desert. There's no health and safety, so you can just walk between the carriages, walk to the outdoor carriage, right, which is basically just a couple of wooden racks, one you can sit on. And so you're outside now, there's desert all around you, you're trundling through the desert. I assume this is probably an old line from some mine. You're trundling through, and then you realise that there's a man in what appears to be 1920s, 1930s Jordanian army uniform, and you think, bit weird. And then you look at him and he's got a large machine gun. That's what he's got. There's a lot of kids around him, like children, proper tourist children. Everyone's from all over the world and they're all taking photographs, so I'm not threatened until he starts sort of shooting his gun into the air. And I did check at this point, they're all blank bullets, there is no problem, everything's fine, kids are laughing, there's no big deal. But you know, it is next to Israel and you do get a bit meh. I didn't really expect to see a man just randomly shooting a machine gun into the sky. Then, out of nowhere, a bloke on a horse comes barreling across the hilltop in the distance, sand pounding around the horse's feet. As he comes down towards the train, all the kids are screaming, everyone's getting excited, loads of people are taking videos. He's got a fucking gun, old school rifle, starts shooting at the train. Now, blank bullets. It did feel a bit bloody scary, to the point where I was actually hiding. At one point, I sort of went back into the main train area and was hiding behind a window frame, which, looking back at it, you probably could have shot through that with a fucking potato gun. Anyway, he's there, a mate comes over the hill, his other mate comes over, right, so now there's three horses barreling along, keeping up with the train. The train stops. I'm like, don't stop, don't stop, they're going to kill us. One of them's got I'd say 6-foot Jordanian flag rock on, right? And then they come on the train and took two children as hostages. Again, we are next to Israel, it's a bit weird, but I was like, okay, the kids are laughing, that's all right. Took them, and then by this point, a sort of 1930s, I think it was actually quite a new vehicle, but it was disguised as a 1930s vehicle with big wheel arches and stuff like that, was there. Hang on, I'm in the airport. I'll just keep going. So I was like, what's my life now then? And he's driving along in the desert, sort of old school 4x4, pulls up next to the train. Kids are taken hostage, that's normal. And then, yeah, they get released back to the train, and there's lots of smiles and lots of photographs and hugs, and everyone just gets on with their life. And then the next thing you know, the train trundles off down through Wadi Rum overlooking these sort of lunar landscapes, Martian landscapes, and then it just drops you off at a station in the middle of nowhere. And at that point, some 4x4s rock up with sort of benches on the back. Get off the train, get on the 4x4, freeze your tits off because the sun's going down and it's getting cold, and you're being hammered by the wind, and then that drops you back off at the original station where your car's parked, and you just go on with your life. Just drive out of Wadi Rum like nothing happened. And you're sort of driving down the highway, what they call the desert highway. The desert highway goes the whole north-south of Jordan, from Amman in the north to the very south. And you're heading back to Amman thinking, today hasn't been normal, has it? A couple of hours ago, I was on a train through a Martian lunar landscape as men came over the brow of a hill shooting me with an old-school shotgun. Lovely. That's what travel's all about. Here I am in Amman Airport back now. I camped in the middle of nowhere last night. Well, I say I camped. That makes me sound brazen and adventurous. I stayed in a hotel not that far off the desert highway. I didn't know anything about it, but I did find out when I got there that the most hospitable man ever. Unbelievable. I have to say, Jordanians in general, really big on hospitality. I think it dates back to those Bedouin roots and the fact that it can be quite an abrasive country, extreme hot, extreme cold. Not that easy to survive here, I would imagine, in the early days of the country. But, yeah, he was so nice. And he told me... Sorry about the noise. And he told me that I was in the highest hotel in Jordan, which I didn't realise, but that would explain why it was so cold. And, yeah, it was great. It was lovely. Made me a nice cup of mint tea. I had a chat with him. He was big on hospitality. He said, isn't the world a bad place? We all need to be brothers. And I was like, yeah, that's nice. And then this morning, I woke up really early because I had to leave early. And he was there. He made me a cup of coffee. And he said, can I have a hug? And I said, absolutely. We had a little hug, and off I went. And everything was great until I realised I left my fucking speaker behind. Fuck. Not really the point I'm making. Great hospitality, really good people, very lovely country. I wish I could see a bit more of it. I wish I could spend a bit more time. I didn't even get into Amman. I didn't spend any time in any cities. But it's only a fleeting trip. Basically, I'm on my way to... where am I going? Sri Lanka. And this was it's the cheapest way to come was through Jordan. And I was like, well, if I'm doing that, I'll definitely have a few days. So I think I've done 4 nights. It's not nearly enough. My big takeaways, whole bunch of fuck all. Extraordinary happy people who are very hospitable. I really haven't chowed down on that point enough, actually. They've been amazing. Like, everywhere I've been, they've just been so kind and friendly. Like last night, I went to a restaurant, and even though it was quite early, actually, they said, oh, we're kind of closed, but come in anyway. And I was like, oh, okay, it's only 6:30. And they're like, yeah, no, it doesn't matter. We'll open. We'll just hang out with you. And I was like, all right. I suppose food's out of the question. He goes, well, we've got some chicken. And I was like, I'd love some chicken. He fucking got in his car, crossed town, and went to some fast food place. Because he came back, had a chicken kebab and chips in a box. I said, do you want that? I was like, yeah, be nice. Amazing. Didn't have to do that. I don't know if he made any money on it. Probably not. Might have made a couple of dinars, maybe a couple of quid. So, yeah, really good country. I'm going to have to go now because I'm going to have to get on this plane. I hope you've got a sort of general brushstrokes glimpse. Do come here. It's really, really, really safe. I think the Middle East gets a bad rap, sometimes for good reason. Not this country. Really safe, really friendly, really easy to travel. Never felt threatened at all. Food's good as well. I'm not massively, massively into this part of the world, the food, but I do like a bit of hummus. I do like a bit of tzatziki. Lots of chicken. Not a lot of fish. Yeah, I'm probably... Yeah, you can. And for that reason, I'm going to leave you. Oh, that's where I'm going. Sharjah. I've got to go via Sharjah. All right, keep your knickers on. I'm on my way. All right, enjoy yourself. Big love. Thanks for listening.
WeMakePodcasts.com